Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast. How's it going, Tim?
It's going well. Yeah, busy week. How are you?
Very good. Lots to talk about today. It's another episode of the Moto News. And the first one we've got today, I mean, this has caused a real buzz online, is the fact that Yamaha have said, sorry, I had to pause there. It looked like I was about to cry, but it was just a swallowing, that they're not going to continue the R1, which is a, you know, a big, big, big story. The idea is that they, well, they haven't said they're going to phase it out or anything, but they've said that they won't be updating the engine to meet the latest, I think it's Euro 5 Plus emissions regulations. And we all know what that means, don't we, mate?
Yeah, it's kind of the death knell, isn't it? It's we're not going to make a consumer version of it anymore.
It doesn't take a high-level detective to read between the lines there. It means the R1 will be gone. The R1M, which is the more fancy pants version, I think they're around the 20 grand mark. 18, I think, for the R1 or something, 22, if my recent videos and research serve me correctly. But it definitely has caused a big, I don't know,
well, clear upset. Yeah, I mean, you were nearly in tears describing
just
it.
Then. So,
yeah. it's a weird one. It's one of those stories that actually I heard outside of you mentioning it as well in other news reports, which must mean that it is in the kind of general conversation.
What, normally motorcycle news stuff is just me WhatsApping you, is it?
Yeah, most of my motorcycle news comes from you. Yeah, you've got your finger on the pulse. But when it's sort of, it's other biking friends of mine being like, oh my God, they're finishing the R1. None of which, by the way, own an R1 or have ever owned an R1, but it's one of those bikes.
I think that's the problem.
Yeah, and I think that's what I said to them was it mustn't be selling. I mean, for them not to continue it must mean that it's not really pulling in the money for them.
The fundamental issue, I think, with sports bikes is, you know, they're expensive to make. There's lots of research that goes into them. Mm. They've got to have all the latest techie features to look desirable. Mm-hmm. That means they're expensive. And yet ultimately, you know, the whole sector isn't really selling a great deal. And that's probably because most people who used to ride sports bikes in their 90s or whatever don't really fancy stooping down to some really low clip-on bars anymore. So I think ultimately it's not the first casualty we've seen over the last few years in the sports bike market. And it won't be the last. Yeah, I think it's just a broad pattern that we're going to be seeing because it's just the constraints of the format, right?
Yeah.
It's not a comfortable bike. Mm. It's expensive. Mm. Who wants to spend all that money on that when you could buy a Multistrada V4 or something really exciting like that? Still really fast, but I mean, a million times more comfortable. I was thinking though, we're not really massively like sports bike nuts, are we?
No.
I wouldn't call myself a sports bike nut. Would you?
No, but I think a lot of that for me is that it's I'm always about the sort of context of using the bike, as in like use the bike where it's at its best, where it's showing itself off, right? And you're going to enjoy it the most. And I think with a sports bike, I haven't yet had the chance to do a track day. So the place where they really excel clearly is on the track. But on the road, if it was a choice or a toss up between here's some keys to, you know, a sports bike, like you say, clip-ons, lean forward, or here's the naked equivalent, right? MT10 being a good example for the R1, you're probably going to be fighting for the MT10 keys because it just is a little bit more usable.
Totally. You know, I was just thinking as well, you're saying that about the track day aspect of things, and I was talking about how the market's changed over the last 20, 30 years. Mm. It really made me think of the time at the London Motorcycle Show. So that was the last episode, a couple of weeks back, when we were walking around the Honda stand, which wasn't a full Honda stand, but just the history of the Fireblade. And they had Fireblades from however many years it's been produced, 30-odd, isn't it, or something?
Yeah, yeah.
And comparing a 90s Fireblade when they were around the 140 or 50 horsepower mark to the modern day where it's 210 or something like that. Even on the track, there are probably very few people who can get the most out of it now or who it feels like appropriate for, because these bikes as well, the R1s, the R1M, are also over 200 horsepower. So it's like even that appeal might have gone. And I've experienced that, mate, as a very, very average to below average track rider. You know, I went out on the BMW trip last year with the S1000 RR at Jerez. I think I said that right. And it's just not even touching the sides. I had more fun on a Ninja 650 or something like that on a different track day I've been on. And so I think even maybe that aspect isn't that appealing anymore. But you're right, the MT10, I'm thinking about that. If they're not updating that engine, which is a beaut of an engine. Mm-hmm. Cross-plane, inline four, sounds mm-hmm. like a bit like a V4 or something.
Yeah.
If you hear one of those going up the road with a loud exhaust on it, you know exactly what it is. And it is a beautiful thing to hear. As a biker, I would say that. Probably the rest of the neighborhood is thinking, shut up. That sounds terrible.
Yeah.
But for me, I love hearing an R1 or an MT10.
Mm.
But if they're not updating the engine for the R1, it probably doesn't look that good for the MT10
either.
It is a different tune.
It is a different tune, yeah. And they do, they can sort of, they've done very clever things in the past where they'll just refine it, they'll do some trickery, normally with the catalytic converter as well to make it sort of meet the standards. Mm. I guess it sort of depends on how well the MT10 stands up on its own and how well that one sells. Because if there's a huge market for the MT10, and actually as far as those like bigger, like over 1,000cc naked bikes go, I see more of them than I see of other equivalents, I would say. So maybe there's enough of a market for them to kind of tease that out a little bit more, hopefully, because it is a cool bike.
Well, I mean, the MT10, they updated it a year or two back now, maybe a year. And so probably it's got a good few years left in it. And it does run at 160 something horsepower, I think. So maybe they can make it that much cleaner that it's not necessarily an issue. But to be honest, they've made the MT09 so good this year, apparently. Yeah. I can't wait to get hold of one. It's a little bit more aggressive in the riding position now. And when I rode the previous gens back to back, MT07, MT09, MT10, I much prefer the MT09. On the road because it's a bit lighter, and I was using more of that bike as well. And even the MT09, you probably on most roads anyway, you're not really going to be riding it 100% all the time.
I mean, speak for yourself. I ride everywhere 100% capacity. I don't leave anything on the table. No,
that's true, man.
No, that's why I look so frantic. No, the MT10, that's weird, actually. Yeah, I've spoken to a few people where they're like, they prefer, most people do prefer the MT09. And I think I'm one of the few that actually preferred the MT10 when I rode, and I've ridden both of them. It was a while ago, not since the most recent update, but I have to admit, I felt more at home on the MT10, which I was very surprised by because I did think the MT09 would be more my comfort zone.
That's classic Tim, that. Billy Big Balls. The more power, the better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, I mean, look, the engine is phenomenal. And so I think there was definitely some appeal in the sound and feel of that engine and the sort of effortlessness of how quick it goes. I do get some of that super naked appeal, but it just felt a bit big to me once you've threaded the MT09 around a few lanes and then I did the exact same route on the MT10. I was like, yeah, it's got more power and that makes a bigger bike, but I feel like I'm losing something in agility. But I'm not
sure,
you know, I'm not trying to convince you. I respect your stance. It's got me thinking though about like all the other engines that might be on the way out. I feel a bit glum about it. Maybe you can cheer me up.
I can hear that, in your voice. You do sound a little bit morose.
Well, it's like the best engines on the market are the ones that are a bit weird.
Yeah.
Like a cross-plane inline
four.
You know, it's the only one really.
Yes.
And I've got me thinking about like the Rocket 3 with a 2.5 litre inline triple that's appropriate realistically for a car than a motorcycle.
Yes.
What else? Like the Goldwings flat six. Always been a big fan of that.
Yeah.
But massive, 1.8 litres, probably quite a lot of effort to update it, to keep it emissions compliant. I've noted down here the Ducati V4s, engines like that, given that they're not the most fuel efficient, those engines. If you compare a Multistrada, a Panigale V4, a Street Fighter V4, all those bikes to the closest equivalent from another manufacturer, they're almost always a bit more thirsty. But you kind of accept that because you're going to get better performance. But in terms of like cleanliness of their output, it's probably not great.
No.
And that's got me worried because effectively what it means is some of these more exciting engines that make motorcycles varied and weird and wonderful, you know, they might be making way for more, let's say, vanilla parallel twins and things like that.
Yeah.
Which we've got loads of. I mean, thankfully, the MT09 is at least a triple.
Yeah.
So there aren't as many of those on the market, but I just hope that the more, I don't know, wacky and daring engines.
Daring's a good way of putting it. Yeah. I mean, a lot of them are an exercise in excess, aren't they? They are, look at what we can do. I mean, you're talking sort of Billy Big Bollocks. That's a manufacturer flexing because you don't need to make a 2.3 litre three cylinder. You just don't need to to do that, right?
I think it's like perhaps a Hail Mary, you know, or a last hurrah.
Yeah.
Gosh, you got to go and buy one quick. The counterpoint is hopefully more exciting but cleaner I say in air quotes because I'm not fully versed on like the entire CO2 output or whatever of the
sure.
manufacturing process of electric bikes. But that side of things, electrics, hybrids, and that sort of stuff, you would hope as these more exciting engines get phased out, maybe more exciting stuff would be coming in at that end. But I'm just not feeling that at the moment. Like Triumph did that cool looking speed triple that was electric. They did a sort of research partnership. Looked amazing, but it was just a prototype. Ducati, you know, they're making the Moto e-bikes for the race series, the electric race series.
Yeah.
But there's no production equivalent. The Kawasaki bikes are naked and are fared electric and also the hybrid equivalents as well, which you've got to say, lots of respect for pushing and getting four bikes on the market.
Yeah.
But ultimately, they're all, I don't know, commuter type bikes really, aren't they?
Some of them are, yeah. I think, and we've said this before, but maybe the ones that will hit the market and do the best and therefore get the most investment will be this sort of, in air quotes again, boring commuter bikes, those sorts of things, just to sort of get your A to B. And maybe they'll do a couple of, just for the sake of showing off and flexing, do some slightly more exciting bikes, possibly. But
perhaps,
it's dictated by the market, mate. I mean, obviously, it's great to go and show what you can do, and a lot of them will do that, and that's what sort of prototypes are for. But when it comes to actually putting it out on the market, it then needs to be an audience for it, because otherwise, you know, if it doesn't sell, then you're just gonna bankrupt yourself, aren't you?
Totes. I guess the only silver lining, perhaps, I don't know if you saw this, but the R9, the much rumored and long anticipated R9 that's been appearing on copyright documents and stuff like that for ages,
yeah,
looks like it might be on the way, because one of the World Supersport team managers said that they're racing R6s at the moment, but he knows from an internal conversation that that'll end next year and an R9 will take its place. So if a race bike's coming, almost certainly a production bike's coming, especially if they just get rid of the R1, then there's a huge gap in their lineup for something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably realistically much cleaner running engine. It won't be anywhere near as powerful, I don't think. Maybe in the sort of 120 to 150 kind of range.
Mm.
Depends if they change the tune versus the MT09.
Yeah.
But assume they will. Mm. But that's going to be a good bike, surely. And that might tide us over until something good that's like electric comes, I guess.
It's so, such a throwaway comment. Yeah, really great. hopefully. It'd be nice. It'd be a good little sort of playing partner for the street triple. And so, well, sit between the street triple and speed triple, isn't it? So that'd be a nice kind of, it's got some,
totally.
Got some competition at least.
Anyway, moving swiftly on to something from their Japanese neighbours over at Honda. This is a bit of a weird one, mate. Occasionally these sort of copyrights and patents and that sort of thing pop up. This one, though, is from Honda. Shout out to Cycle World for finding this one. And basically the idea is it will be a crosswind assist, possibly like a lane keeping assist. So the sort of thing you're very much used to in a car where it'll see the edge of the lane markings and kick you back into the lane if you're wandering over because you've zoned out.
Yeah.
This might well be coming to bikes in the future.
Mm.
So the bike will be able to steer effectively on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
Immediate impressions, Tim.
I'm a small concern in terms of the fact that with a car, your balance isn't key to the lane assist and the steering wheel being tweaked out of your fingertips, as opposed to the bike going, nah, keeping that lane and your balance is going the other way. That feels a little bit strange, but I'm sure they've worked it out. I'm sure there'll be some testing involved and it's probably not as extreme. My initial thought is that it sounds pretty out there, but as it sort of trickles down to a consumer level, chances are it'll be less extreme, right? A little bit more moderate. It's the same with those wings, right? The active aerodynamics, where we like active aerodynamics, and then you actually see it in real life and you're like, oh, it makes a little difference. Like it's a small little thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect that this is going to be able to like shove you across three lanes in the blink of an eye. It will probably be quite
subtle, right? Yeah.
Modest input.
Yeah.
Firstly, it sort of reminds me straight away of that self-balancing bike.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I have, yeah.
The Honda, where it's following the guy around like a dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Very weird to look at. And you see something like that, and again, it's almost like high fashion on the catwalk.
Mm.
You're like, well, that's so ridiculous that no one's going to wear that or ride that. But it's the little ideas that trickle down into, you know, H&M 3 years later, aka a boring commuter bike or something.
Yeah.
And I guess that has helped them develop something that can balance, regardless of what the front wheel's doing, whether the rider's a little bit off balance or not. But the idea is it's a servo mounted behind the steering head. One assumes that the handlebars aren't decoupled from the fork. Do you know what I mean? Imagine if you were just holding the bars going forward, but the front wheel can independently move. I don't think that's happening. You must get some feedback from the bars. And the inputs are listed as a steering torque sensor. So are you putting anything through the bars? Steering angle sensor. So where's the wheel pointing? Speed of the bike, acceleration of the bike, but also maybe a radar or camera. And that would be, I guess, tying it into stuff like active cruise and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Look, yeah, I have been caught by a few surprising crosswinds. things like, I was thinking, you know that huge bridge over the estuary from Bristol kind of area over to South Wales? Yeah. You know the one?
Yeah.
Naturally, you're up in the air. It's an estuary. You know, do the maths. You're going to get some strong winds.
Yeah.
And you've got those huge concrete things where the suspension, oh my gosh.
Science with Rob.
Bridge engineering knowledge is poor. But where the cables come out.
Yes.
Those big vertical concrete things, you're riding along, right? And you've got this severe side wind. So you're leaning into it a little bit.
Yes, yeah.
And they're substantial, those supports, you know, they're not just a couple meters wide.
Sure.
They're really quite big.
Yeah.
So when you ride past them, you get sheltered from the wind for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe less, but completely. And then immediately back into the crosswind.
Yeah.
That is quite
harrowing.
I think that's quite an extreme example.
Yeah, yeah.
Harrowing's
I get what you
strong.
Yeah, but no, I understand what you're saying. I think I've experienced sort of that or close to. I do remember it, but I can't remember exactly where. But yeah, it's not a fun feeling at all. Similar to that,
if you don't see it coming, you just end up.
Yeah, no, exactly. Those ones are worse because you're not expecting it. Whereas, and I think this is genuinely the term, so I'm not trying to make a pun here, but the suck and blow effect of a truck. When you fall into when you're alongside a truck, basically, you can feel it.
I always wondered why you would always sit alongside trucks.
I linger there a little
too
long.
We're on a ride together. Yeah. I'm like, come on, mate, keep up.
Anyway, you get pulled into the truck. You know when you're alongside it and you get pulled towards it a little bit, right? And then you come out the other end and it pushes you wayward. So yeah, no, it's a similar sort of thing. However, with the truck, because you know you do it a few times, you know it's going to happen, so you're kind of prepared for it. But the thing that you're saying with the bridge, when it's kind of a freak wind like that and you can't really account for it, so you can't brace for it almost. So it just sort of, I know, you know, the lanes luckily are big enough that you can kind of cruise that out. But it does adjust your line uncomfortably. So no, if it can work, if they can pull it off, then I'm all for it. It sounds interesting. I just wonder, like I say, when it sort of trickles down to actually being made, if it's ever made, how much of a difference it's going to be. Probably quite subtle.
I would imagine so. I think, honestly, putting this out to the audience, I'd love to know people's feedback in the comments of the full episode here. But it really feels like one of those things where most of the audience are going to say it's too far. Because there's fairly negative reaction, I'd say, to stuff like active cruise control. There's only a small percentage of riders who would want that. Mm. To extend that kind of intervention to steering, probably only
maybe
a very,
a
very, very small percentage of riders. Yeah. Maybe if you knew, it would be helpful on like a learner bike, like an NC750 or something.
Mm.
But then is it really teaching you to ride? Great question.
Yeah.
Leave your comments below, letting us know what you think this would actually be good for. Maybe on a big tourer as well.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
where you've got a big side area, you've got a passenger, you've got the luggage.
True, very true.
You're acting like a big sail.
Yeah.
But you might be like an older rider who's feeling a bit less comfortable with the side of the bike or, you know, something like that. Maybe that'd be good. But otherwise, I think most people would just rather get sucked and blown by the lorry. Next up, though, we've got a very interesting one. I think, especially on a personal level here, we've got the news that Brian Gillen, who's the sort of chief engineer or was at MV Agusta, is leaving for none other than Norton. I'd say these are the only two motorcycle factories we've been to
Yeah. Well, it's certainly company anyway. For me, yeah, they're the only two, yeah.
And so that just felt like a very relevant story to us, because we also, when we went on the MV Agusta factory tour a couple of years back, I spent some time with Brian. In fact, he gave us the tour of the factory.
Yeah.
We spent a bit of time interviewing him as well about the new LXP Orioli adventure bike. It was called the Lucky Explorer 9.5 back then.
Yeah.
And it's just that's a big career change and an interesting move.
Very.
But I think just thinking back to that interview, he was really passionate about the bikes and the development of that bike. But also I was really appreciative of the time that he gave us. And he didn't really mind at all spending a good hour or two wandering around the factory and answering our questions, which I was very grateful for.
He was a really good host. Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed that day. Really liked meeting him. He was clearly very intelligent, fascinating to talk to as well. And yeah, that is... He is in my head very inextricably sort of linked with that bike as well, yeah.
And many of the other,
for sure. MV Agusta, but obviously that's the one we spoke to him about, so totally. I can't separate the two for that one. But no, that's really good. I mean, I would say that feels like a loss for MV and a gain for Norton, in my opinion. But then obviously we would say that because we liked him. But yeah, that's my first sort of take on it.
I mean, almost certainly. I wonder if partly some of the cause might be the Piera Mobility Group taking a stake in MV Agusta. They're the KTM owners. I guess there's a change of approach when you get new owners in like that, so perhaps maybe that's partly to do with it. But also, you know, the Norton setup now, as we saw firsthand, is really impressive. You know, it's a modern factory. They've got big plans for it. And also, you've got to say, the Norton brand, much like MV Agusta, has a huge history, and that must be quite alluring. But what I was thinking was interesting about the Norton experience, we didn't get the full factory tour.
No.
But what we did see of it, a kind of whip round in about 20 minutes or something, wasn't it? Was like this idea that they're really focusing on quality assurance and having QR codes on all of the components that go into each bike. And that means they're trackable back to an individual or a batch of metal or anything like that, so that if there are quality issues further down the line, they can trace them back to what was the problem that caused those. So this real in-depth focus on upping the quality, as well as the general facility looking pretty similar to other factories we've been to in terms of capability. I mean, we've only been to MV and Norton together, but of course I've seen some other factories. Like, I went to the Ducati factory. I've had a look around the Triumph factory, where they do still have a production line where they make some bikes. And it has to be said, the Norton factory was looking more in that ilk than what I've seen of their previous factory.
Yeah.
But still, even despite that kind of focus, I would say the more modern and performance orientated bikes, like the V4 Cafe Racer, they look fantastic, and they've really been giving them the promotional side of things. But I haven't seen any press bikes yet, and I'm not sure if they're being delivered to customers either. I believe there is some emphasis on delivering bikes that have already been ordered, like Commandos, that weren't delivered by the previous owners. I know there's a focus on making sure they get those bikes out. So that's part of the reason they haven't. So I think they're waiting to get around to building those, but almost certainly taking someone of Brian Gillen's experience, making artisan bikes, let's say, up in a similar sort of price point, performance focused, but also visually striking. And also they have to have that specialness to warrant the price in terms of the build quality, the materials, all that kind of thing. The exclusivity, all that. It just seems like a direct fit for their ambitions to build that kind of bike.
Yeah.
And so I think, in summary, Tim, wholeheartedly agree, it just has to be a good move.
Yeah, like I say, for Norton, certainly, that's a very positive sign. And definitely curious to see, like you say, the V4 coming out so we can actually get hands on something else. Because we've seen the Commando. That's great. We've got opinions on that. But seeing some more stuff from them would kind of cement that opinion, I think.
It was also floated that we could go back and film a tour of it at some point. So I think we should wait until Brian is there.
Yeah, that'd be,
and then ask to go and do that.
That'd be really good, yeah.
And request specifically that he gives us the tour.
I'm sure he's very busy, but can we get him in, please? Yeah, we're very important.
Yeah, yeah. And this will be a series of videos where we just tour motorcycle factories, but only if they're guided by Brian Gillen. It's going to be quite a brief series at the moment, but hopefully if we can encourage him to keep quitting his job and moving to other manufacturers, then it'll be good for business for us as well. Moving on, mate, we've got comments of the week. A couple of episodes back, we talked about the MV Augusta. Gosh, that's actually could have been a good segue, but I was oblivious to the fact we were moving on to an MV. But yeah, we talked about the MV Super Veloce 1000 as being possibly a candidate for the best looking bike ever. It's up there for me, even though it is quite busy looking.
Yeah, still.
I wouldn't say it really was reflected in the comments on that video. A few people saying, it's too busy, too much going on.
Okay.
And so I got a bunch of other recommendations out of the comments. Many thanks to everybody for your contributions. I thought we'd rattle through a few, Tim, and rate them. You got to say whether they're a better shout or worse shout than a Super Veloce 1000.
Okay.
Number one, we've got William Fisher. He suggested the Ducati 1199 Superleggera.
Yeah, so if you're wondering whether or not I think that's better or worse looking, that for me is better looking. I think that is one of my all-time favourites.
I've got to say as well, as soon as I opened that and looked at it, I was like, yeah, hands down,
that
is a winner, or it's got to be up there. I don't know if you can get a price for these at the moment, but it says on MCN's review that on the used market, they're fetching around 48 grand.
Yeah.
But it is a stunner, and so you can kind of see where your money's going there. Also from Crom One Hell, he suggested the 1198S Course.
Yeah.
Not quite as good, I wouldn't say.
No, the Superleggera is better for me. However, this is one of my favourite looking, sort of modern looking sports bike Ducatis. And it is one I've had in my, you know, when you're going through Auto Trader, when you've sold a bike and you're like, oh, what can I get? And I found a couple of these and I was like, oh, that's tempting.
Not the Course version. Surely that's got to be out of budget.
Yeah, not so much that one. Just the 1198 in general.
Just the 1198.
Yeah, yeah. Which I think in general looks really good. And actually, I think I prefer it just in this red colour, to be honest. But, you know, either way, very pretty bike.
But yeah, I'd say 1199 Superleggera edges that one for me, but still a good looking bike. Crom One Hell also suggested the Kawasaki H2 series, which I think is just, don't want to flavour your reaction to this one, Tim. That's preposterous to say.
preposterous is a really good word for that. Yeah, I think I had a slightly less strong reaction to it maybe than you, but yeah, I mean, nah. I want to be as polite as I possibly can, but not.
The thing is with the H2s, they are striking.
Yes.
I get it.
Yeah.
Like, you stop and stare at it. Really modern. Yeah, especially like the H2R, there is something just sci-fi levels of wow factor on that bike. But compared to a Super Veloce, which, you know, if you're saying the Super Veloce is quite busy, I don't think Crom One Hell said that, but some people did.
Yeah.
Like, this is even more busy.
Yeah, busy to the nth degree. This is, it's...
honestly, mate.
It's, I'm going to say, yeah, garish. It looks like it's sort of the sort of bike that maybe a 10-year-old might draw.
Oh, you said you were going to not be too harsh.
All right, yeah, and I've gone back on it. I'm rescinding that. I'll take some fire in the comments. I don't mind. I think I do think it does make me sort of stop. And it is the sort of bike where you'd walk over to it because you're like, oh, that is kind of cool. But it's a bit try hard. It's just not as subtle as I would choose. Certainly not as the Ducatis.
Does the Top Gun Association add anything for you in terms of
not really
curb appeal?
Nah, it was out for a long while before that, and I already sort of formed my opinions before seeing it on Top Gun, so no.
Some people occasionally comment on the channel when we're on together saying you look like Tom Cruise, so that happened.
What a compliment. And I've been using my alias to type those comments, clearly. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's keep going, mate. We've got a few more to get through here. So R6YNY says Ducati 900 SS in black and gold, sort of 70s bike, 70s, 80s. Stunning. Thoughts?
Yeah. Many thoughts going through my head on this one. I think because this is the original, or one of the originals of that shape, I think it owns it better than the MV, because the MV, in essence, is sort of imitating that breed of bike, right? But with a modern take on it.
Oh, I see what you're saying, like a modern take on a retro.
Yeah, it'd be
bike.
Like comparing an E-Type to a modern Jaguar or something. You know what I mean? Like, you've taken the influence from
it.
You have to side with the original, yeah, or one of the originals. So yeah, probably the Ducati on this occasion.
Very cool. I think I agree. R6YNY also says Mitagutsi V100 Mandello in the green sort of paint job, but also says his arrives on the 1st of March. So You can't have self-noms, because otherwise I'd be saying...
Yeah, I'm nominating this bike because it's my bike. It's the... yeah, I mean, obviously...
Best looking bike ever, mate. 2020 Triumph Tiger 800 XCA. Full and, luggage.
Yeah.
Crash bars. Yeah.
You're entitled to think that, I think. And maybe someone will agree with you out there. Probably the same person that thinks I look like Tom Cruise. Yeah. This is... I mean, I do like an MV. I do like a Moto Guzzi, sorry. And this is... did we mention this one? I feel like I definitely mentioned this one as one of my picks as well. Because it is...
You may well have done.
Eye-catching, yeah.
It's a nice-looking bike. Apex Radius and Graham Tricker both said the original Super Veloce 800, the Seri Oro, was better looking because maybe it was a bit more simple, cleaner lines. Mm-hmm. I actually think there's possibly a case for that. Apex Radius, MVF4. Do you like an MVF4? They had one parked at the factory, didn't they, in the lobby when we went to tour?
Yeah, I do. It's definitely not the bike I would pick. You know, given the choice, side by side, it isn't the look I would go for. But I definitely think it does look nice. It's very attractive as a bike, yeah.
So the Super Veloce 1000 beats that.
Still,
Apex Radius also suggests the Moto Guzzi Le Mans, which is like a, you know, classic. It looks like the recent Moto Guzzi V7 course,
yeah,
where they've tried to turn the V7 into a cafe racer style bike.
Basically, yeah.
And they've used pretty much the same paint job with a sort of flat line through it,
yeah,
and it's got the red as well. But maybe this is, you know, this set the standard maybe for that look of bike and that half-fed cafe kind of vibe.
Yeah, I mean,
but it is a beaut.
It falls into the similar category as black and gold one. The 900 SS. Yeah, I think because it was one of the originals, and I know they are very attractive. I've always thought they did look good, but I think the majority of the ones that I like are ones that have been tweaked and customized, dare I say, because that is a little sacrilegious when you're talking about bikes that have pedigree and heritage. You know, you can do what you want to bikes people care less about. That's one way you don't want to go too far, but I've seen quite a few at the Bike Shed show where.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I just think they're done really well. As long as it's a high-end custom build and not just somebody's hacking at it in their garage, I think they look better as a custom.
Oof. Yeah, maybe. I've been very impressed by those. I remember the exact ones you're talking about from the Bike Shed show a couple of years back. Mm. They did look really good, but I'd be happy with either, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I would say, again, because it's sort of an original, like you say, precursor to some of these designs, I'll probably go with this one as well. Graham Tricker coming back in with the Bimota DB7 and DB8.
Mm-hmm.
Any good? Sort of sports bike vibe, quite aggressive looking, angles down. Wouldn't say it's quite like a timeless design for me.
No. It's an odd one, really. You don't see too many Bimotas. I've seen a couple, but it is a bit of a rare thing to pick up. Yeah.
So you're still processing it?
Yeah. I think I still prefer the MV on that occasion. I do see the argument for this one, but no, not my taste.
Dawit Fikadu says MV Agusta Rush, which is the kind of crazy cafe looking thing. It's built upon the Brutale 1000. It's got a disc wheel at the back.
Yeah.
It's a striking bike, let's say, but I wouldn't say it's a beaut.
I think striking is a really good way of putting it. That disc wheel at the back is very unique. I like that. However,
you'd almost like to see it without it.
Yeah, I think it really does help it stand out. But then, yeah, that really is throwing everything you've got at a design. And it's, you know what I mean? Just pick a tone, pick a standout feature. That is peacocking to the nth degree where you're like, just pick a lane, mate. It's a bit too much. But there is something very striking about it. It's not an ugly bike necessarily, but like I say, I think it's a bit try hard and I would go with the Super Veloce.
You summed that up perfectly. Peacocking springs straight to mind when I saw that disc cover. Thank you very much for all your suggestions. Really enjoyed some of those beautiful looking bikes. And we'll just round off today with our bike of the week. It's a little bit of a section where I think we're trying to celebrate a theme's developing, isn't it? Sort of unusual combinations, let's say. We admire the bravery to try something a bit out of the ordinary. But this one, I've been seeing it knocking around on Instagram and there's a YouTube video about it now. It's Thornton 100, who, again, seen some of their bikes at the Bike Shed show. Mm. They do these amazing Triumph conversions. But I don't know if you've seen this one, mate. The Desert Bobber.
Only since you're obviously pointing it out to me. I've seen a couple of theirs with knobbly tyres.
Thing is, though, mate, I think the reason I actually quite like this bike is because it reminds me a little bit of what I was sort of trying to do when I had that Street Twin. Do you remember that with the grey paint job on the tank?
I do, yes.
At one point in time, it had the Continental TKC80s on it, so knobbly looking tyres. Mm-hmm. And it was like a shit version of this, basically. No, it wasn't that bad. It was a cool bike.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like if someone tried to achieve something like this,
sure,
but without the know-how or budget, mm-hmm, or materials
or the welding
parts.
Skills, or because that exhaust, yeah, is a piece of art.
Or the design flair, or the facilities to do it, or yeah, the team to do it.
Yeah.
It was a pale attempt at a similar idea. Mm. And what this is probably like my wildest dreams fulfilled in reality. And I'm going to validate what you said about it not being a particularly practical choice, because those sorts of tires on the road are a bit hard work. And that's with normal, like a normal width front wheel. This has got the wide wheel kit, which must make it steer pretty heavy. In all the time that I had that bike with those terrible tires on that were like teeth chatteringly vibey,
yeah,
handled terribly, like you couldn't roll into a turn. You were either on your side or get upright.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You had two lean angles and one of them was upright.
Yeah.
You know, in all the time I experienced that and persevered with that, every time I parked it up, I was like, oh, I love the way that bike looks on those tires, even if it's stupid.
Yeah.
When I took it to get the tires put on, the bloke was like, why are you putting these tires?
I love
you're off-roading, like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. The amount of people when you go and you're like, look, yeah, I know what I'm doing. Just stick it on. I've asked you for these tires.
I know what I'm doing is stupid. Just put those tires on, mate.
Yeah.
Okay? I'll pay double.
Yeah, yeah.
If we don't have to deliberate over it, just get the tires on so I can go home and vibrate my teeth out along the way. So that's what I think I like about it. It just is no holds barred attempt at making something crazy looking like that. It's always that sort of Mad Max kind of vibe. And for that, I salute them. And I think it's one of the coolest looking bikes they've built, especially with that little mud guard at the rear coming off the bobber seat. I don't know what it is about that.
Yeah, that tail section that is really nice. And the exhaust pipes just poking through there. Very cool.
That is one of their key strengths.
Yeah.
Making weird but beautiful looking exhaust routings. Mm-hmm. Almost to the point where they're doing crazy stuff just because they're showing off. But anyway, it really does set the bike off nicely. As always, we'd love to know what you think of it down in the comments. Do let us know. Also, any suggestions for similarly illogical combinations of motorcycle
genres, designs that maybe you've done yourself,
all that sort of stuff. Any suggestions for those for future bikes of the week, please do let us know and we'll try and include them. Hope everybody's well. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week. So we'll see you then.